In Perek Yud Gimel, we got up to Pasuk Yud Dalet, I think. We're gonna skip around a little bit, because beginning from Pasuk Tesvav, it's pretty much just the names of places and boundaries. So you know, I think we'll skip over this a little bit. You can you can read this on your own, the names of the places and the boundaries and all these things. So
test next week.
Yeah, homework. We'll give you some homework. But to go through it now, I think it'll be a little too dry just going through all the names of the places and things like that. So you're more than welcome to read up on it on your own. I'll just point out a couple interesting things. You know, as I went through Perek Yud Gimel, we'll talk about a couple of psukim just that stand out, that have a little bit more interesting. So first of all, it's interesting. We'll just begin with one pasuk, just pasuk Tesvav. We'll just mention one thing about it. So the pasuk Tesvav says, "Vayitain Moshe lamate bnei Reuven lemishpachosa." Then Moshe, right? Meaning this, in this parak we're beginning to discuss the division of the land. So Moshe is dividing the land of Israel for all of the shvatim, and it says that when he broke it up. So it's interesting. It says that Mitzudas David, the way he interprets that pasuk, because the pasuk says lemishpachosa, that he gave it to them by family. So the Mitzudas David says that we see that Moshe, when he divided the land, he didn't just give a large chunk of land to the Shevet and say, "Okay, guys, you know, do what you want," but he actually split it up by family. That's how the Mitzudas David understands the psukim, that Moshe actually split up the land by family. Now we'll see that there's a lot of different opinions as to how exactly the land was split up and the land was divided. So we'll discuss a little bit more. But that's how the Mitzudas David understands that pasuk. Okay, then the pasukim go on to discuss all the different cities and different places that were given to Reuven, to Shimon, etc., etc. If you look at pasuk, we're going to skip around. If you look at now, take a look at pasuk Chaf Beis. So just an interesting pasuk. So if you look at Chaf Beis, so it talks about all the different cities. Moshe killed the different kings, and he killed Sichon and all the different kings there. And then it says pasuk Chaf Beis. Just an interesting pasuk, kind of stuck in the middle. Vespilam ben Beor hakosem hargu bnei Yisrael becharev el chalaleihem. That Bilam ben Beor, that the Navi describes him as the kosem. Bnei Yisrael killed; they killed him by sword. So why is he described as a kosem? What's a kosem? So a kosem, we know the Torah says that a person is not allowed to be a Jewish person is not allowed to be a kosem. Right, kosein kusamim refers to like some type of sorcery. So here it refers to Bilam as a sorcerer. And it's interesting that some of the Mefarshim, the Radak among them, picks up on this. That why do we refer to Bilam as a sorcerer? Wasn't he a Navi? Right? Wasn't Bilam a Navi? Bilam got these messages from God. Bilam communicated with Hashem. Right? Should he go? Should he not go to curse the Jewish people? Right? And remember, the people from Midian and Moab came to Bilam to curse the Jews. And what did he say? I'll get back to you. I got to check with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Bilam, in a sense, was a Navi. So why are we calling him here a Kosem? So the Radak says that that really he was really a Kosem, meaning really he was a sorcerer. But he was given Nevuah for a short period of time. And he says either he was given Nevuah for a short period of time, or maybe a Malach came to him and just shared with him briefly these Nevuos. But it's interesting, and the Radak says that this was all done l'kavod Yisrael, like really for the Jewish people. Because again, they wanted him to curse. He was a sorcerer. They wanted him to curse Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, Midian and Moab, they came to him to curse Bnei Yisrael. And he was given Nevuah only for a short period of time, either through himself, through dreams, or perhaps through a Malach who came to give him the Nevuah. But it was all l'chavon Yisrael. It was all for the Jewish people so that they would be successful. Yeah.
So when where did Bilam come from? And when he left after that whole episode?
Yeah.
This is where they found him again?
Bilam ben Beor, who was from Pesor. He was from a city called Pesor, I think.
They just happened upon him and said,
okay. No, I mean, we're referring to things that were done in the past. I mean, Bnei Yisrael killed, they didn't kill him now, they killed him.
This is past
though. Yeah. They killed him in the past. Like when they fought with Midian, they ended up.
These are the towns that they're giving.
Yeah.
This is what they said happened to him at the end.
Yeah, it's just mentioning, right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it mentions all the different towns here, Cheshbon and Yudzayin, Cheshbon and Yatzah, Kedemos. It mentions all the different towns. Then Chafalef, it mentions V'chol Arei HaMishor, right, all of the lands of the plains, V'chol Mamlecho Sichon Melecho Emori, Asher Melecho Cheshbon. And then it just mentions Asher Hikamosha Oso Vesnesi, right? And then it says Vesnesi Midian. These were the Nesim of Midian, Evi and Rechem and Sur, Chur, Reva. These were the Nesiche Sichon Yoshvei Haaretz Ves Bilam Ben Bor HaKosev. It just mentions him Derech Agav because he was involved with those Nesi Midian.
Rabbi, it says that they mentioned Bilam specifically because with all his magical powers, they wanted to show that it was just as easy to kill him as it was to kill
all these other people, even though he was a sorcerer.
Exactly.
That's still beautiful. Power. Very nice. Very nice. I think also it's interesting because that you see that Bilam, who was known as like he was the Navi for the Gentiles, you know, he was like the Navi for the Umos HaOlam. But it's clear the Radak says this was only for Klal Yisrael. In other words, all the big things that happen in the world, you know, Chazal say this, that a lot of times you have big things that happen in the world, it's happening for the Jewish people. It's happening for Klal Yisrael. Sometimes this to teach us a lesson for, you know, things that we need to learn for them. But we believe that, you know, that in a sense the world revolves around us. You know, it's not just, you know, us being conceited that the world revolves around us, but we, you know, we're the Am HaNivchar, we're the chosen people, and the things that happen in the world, you know, obviously, you know, not every little thing that happens, but, you know, things that happen in the world revolve around the Jewish people. So here you have Bilam, who was a sorcerer, and he was given Nevuah just for the Jews. You know, really, just for Bnei Yisrael, he was given Nevuah. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him Nevuah, you know, just for Klal Yisrael. So I think it's an interesting perspective that really supports, you know, what Chazal tell us. Okay. Okay, and then again, the Navi goes on to describe the borders of the Bnei Reuven, the borders of the Bnei Gad, Gilad, and, you know, all the different cities and all the different places. And then it goes on to Chavtes, it goes on to Shevet Menashe, right, the half of Shevet Menashe that's settled. And again, we're talking here about the Gvulos in Eiver HaYarden, before we get to Eretz Yisrael. goes through all the different borders. And then interestingly, in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, if you take a look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel, fast forwarding a little bit, so Pasuk Lamed Gimel, again, we're referring here, we're talking about Eiver HaYarden. These are all the cities east of the Jordan River, right before we get to Eretz Yisrael. These are east of the Jordan River. And the Navi tells us in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Ulishevet HaLevi lo nosan Moshe nachalo. Right, that Hashem, that Moshe did not give Shevet Levi any land. Right, again, when Moshe is giving out the land in Eiver HaYarden, east of the Jordan, and Shevet Levi did not get any land east of the Jordan. We'll see soon when we discuss Eretz Yisrael west of the Jordan. They didn't get any land there either. We'll talk about that. But the Navi makes a point to point out both. They didn't get land east of the Jordan, Eiver HaYarden. They didn't get land west of the Jordan, Eretz Yisrael. They didn't get land anywhere. Sorry?
They didn't get land anywhere,
yeah. But the Navi points out both places. Why? So it says here, Hashem Elokei Yisrael hu nachalosa. God is their portion. They don't get a portion of the land. God is their portion. Kasher diber Elohim, right, as it was said to them. So it's interesting, if you contrast here, the Malbim points this out, if you contrast, you know, we just read Pasuk Lamed Gimel, so if you contrast that to Pasuk Yudalad, which is what we ended with last week. Just go back for a minute to Pasuk Lamed Yudalad. So in Yudalad, it also said that Levi didn't get a portion in the land. It says, Rak l'shevet ha-Levi lo nasa nachala, ishe Hashem Elokei Yisrael hu nachaloso, kasher diber lo. So it's interesting to contrast the two psukim, because Yudalad says that the Shevet Levi did not get a portion in the land. Why? Because ishe Yisrael. Ishe Hashem Elokei Yisrael hu nachalasa. What's the Ishe Hashem Elokei Yisrael? The Ishe Hashem are the Karbanos. Right? So in Pasuk Yudalad it says that Levi did not get a share. They didn't get a portion because they got a portion of the Karbanos. What's that referring to? The Matnos Kehuna. That we know that they were given certain portions of the Karbanos right? The Kohanim were given the Zroa, the Chayayim, and the Keva, the different parts of the Korbanos. That was their gift that Bnei Yisrael gave them. And we know the Kohanim and the Levim got different portions of the, not the Korbanos per se, but they got different portions of the people's grain, right? The people's produce. They got Truma and they got Maaser. So they got certain Matnos Kahuna. And in Pasuk Lamed, it focuses not on the, it doesn't focus on the Korbanos or the Matnos Kahuna. It focuses on Hashem Himself. Right, that Hashem Himself is their Nachala. And the Malbim points out that the same thing appears in, if you look in Sefer Dvarim, in Perek Yud Ches of Sefer Dvarim, which you obviously don't have in front of you, but I'll just read the Psukim, but the Malbim says the same dichotomy here between these two aspects that the Levim get in terms of what their portion is, expresses itself in Dvarim as well. If you look in, I'll read in Perek Yud Ches in Sefer Dvarim, Pasuk Aleph, it says, Lo yiyeh la-kohanim ha-levim kol shevet levi chelek v'nachalo im Yisrael. Right, that again, Kohanim and Levim will not get a share with Bnei Yisrael. Ishe Hashem v'nachalasa yocheilun. Again, the same language. Ishe Hashem. Right, they're going to get a portion in the sacrifices. They get a portion in the Matnos Kahuna. And then Pasuk Beis, the very next Pasuk, V'nachala lo yihielo b'kerev echav, they won't get a portion among the Jewish people, b'kerev echav, Shevet Levi won't get a portion. Hashem hu nachalaso. Hashem is their portion. So here you have the same exact, mirroring, the same two psukim that we have in Perek Yud Gimel here, right, of Ishe Hashem and Hashem, that either Ishe Hashem is their nachala, or Hashem is their nachala. The same two aspects appear in I believe it's Parsha Shoftim there, in Devarim Perek Yud Ches, the same two aspects. Ishe Hashem, yeah, it's Parsha Shoftim. Ishe Hashem, and again Hashem. So what are these two things referring to? So the Malbim says that they're referring to two different things. Number one, they didn't get an actual portion in the land. That's number one. So he says that's why it says here chelik v'nachala. It says that in Parsha Shoftim also. Chelik v'nachala. They didn't get an actual portion in the land. Here it says in our perek it says both. It says in both Pesukim, in Pasuk Yudalad and in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lamed Gimel, I'm sorry, it says, Lo Nasan Moshe Nachala Hashem, Lo Nasan Moshe Nachala, then it says again in Pasuk Yudalad, Rak L'Shevet HaLevi Lo Nasan Nachala. In both cases it says they didn't get a Nachala. So the Malbim says that's referring to the fact that they didn't get an actual portion of the land. And in place of that portion, what did they get? The Matnos Kahuna, right? Because again, if you have a chilek in Eretz Yisrael, so you can farm, you can have a farm, you can have produce, you can grow things. Shevet Levi didn't have the ability to do that, so instead they had to get the matnos kahuna from the korbanos. They had to get the matnos kahuna from the produce. That's what they got instead. So what's the second pasuk then? Why do we need a second pasuk of Hashem hu nachalaso? Right, that they didn't get a nachala, but Hashem is a nachalaso. So the Malbim says that if you look closely at the pasuk. In Parsha Shoftim, the second pasuk says, "V'nachala lo yihielo bekerev echav, b'Hashem hu nachalasa." Right. So, what does that mean, bekerev echav? So he says that here the pasuk is referring to an issue of timing, and he says that's also pasuk lamed gimel in our parak also is an issue of timing because they did get certain cities. The Levim didn't get a whole chelek, right? They didn't get a whole swath of a whole portion of land. The way that the other Shvatim did, but they did get certain cities. We know they had 42, right? There were 42 Ari Levim, and then they also had the six Ari Miklat they also had. So in the end, it was 48 cities that were the Levite cities, the Ari HaLevim. So these cities they did get. However, he says, the Pasuk says, V'nachalo lo yihielo bekerev echav. They didn't get them at the same time as everyone else got them. All the land was divided. Moshe divided the land in Aver HaYarden. That they didn't get a portion of. And the land in Eretz Yisrael that Yoshua divided, they also didn't get a portion right away. They were given the portion later. After everything was all said and done, then the Ari Levim were separated. Then the Ari Levim were distributed to the Levim, but it was only after everything was all said and done. And that's why it says, the Pasuk says, that they didn't get a chelek b'kerev echav. Bekerev Echav says the Malbim means they didn't get it at the same time as everyone else. Everything had to be settled first, and then the Levim got their portion. Why was it done that way? So I think it was done that way to show that these cities of the Ari Levim are not on the same they're not on the same level as the portions of the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because Hashem wanted to show that the Levim are separate. The Levim are different. Right? Shevet Levi, I'm saying Levim. It's not really Levim. It's also Kohanim. Right? It's Shevet Levi. It's Shevet Levi, which is the Kohanim and the Levim. But the Kohanim and the Levim are different. Right? They're set aside. They're different. They're not like the rest of Bnei Yisrael. And Hashem says, I need them. Right? I need them. I'm not giving them a chelik in the land. Why? Because I need them to be on call. Right? Hashem wanted the Kohanim and the Levim to be on duty, to be on call. He didn't want them busy with building their countries and building their, you know, not their countries, but building their, you know, their states, you know, their areas and their farms. And Hashem didn't want that. Hashem wanted them to be available. Yeah.
They will live, and they were also lived in one specific area.
They lived in these cities. They were given cities to live in because the Levim needed places to live. Right? You know, they needed a place to live. So they were given 42 cities. Our Levim.
Now those Levim and Kohanim that had to work in the base of Midrash.
Yes.
They
were in Yerushalayim at that time. Correct, yeah. They had rotations. They had rotations.
In the other cities?
I'm sorry?
Did they do Karbanos in the other cities?
No. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim, so then all the Karbanos were done in Yerushalayim proper. You know, before the Beis HaMikdash was built, so then they had the Mizbeach was in different places, and they had Bamos. But after that, once the Beis HaMikdash was built, then everything was concentrated in Yerushalayim. But what they had was they had rotations of the Kohanim and the Levim.
Right.
So they weren't on duty the whole year, but they were on duty for part of the time, and then they had to come to Yerushalayim, they would work, and then the rest of the year they lived in their cities, in the Arei Levim. You know, but it's interesting that it, you know, the Navi is very careful. I mean, the Torah also, you know, but the Torah and the Navi are very particular about the fact that the Levim were separate. And we'll see in Perek Yud Dalet, we're going to see the same thing, that it's emphasized again and again how separate they were. Okay.
When they had the shifts, the Levim, there were 24 shifts.
Right.
Okay. When they had the shifts, they definitely did other work. You said God didn't want them to do any other work and plow the
fields. Right.
They're only working 2 weeks a year.
Right. No, that's true.
What are they doing? Twiddling their thumbs? I mean,
No.
I know they're in cola or whatever, but they got rid of something else too.
I'm
sorry?
Good wages for the time they spent.
No, so they definitely have good wages for the time they spent. That's right. They're not working in the Beis HaMikdash the whole year. They're only working part, you know, a short time in the Beis HaMikdash. Each family, but the rest of the time. But they were the teachers. They were the rabbeim. They were the rabbanim. They were the teachers. You know, the pasuk says ki sifse kohen yishmeru das. You know, it seems like that again. I don't know if they were rabbanim. I don't know the way it worked there. You know, I mean, I'm not a Shevet Levi. So when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, I'm going to have to find another job.
If you look at the Anshei Knesset Adol, it was mostly made up of everybody.
Yeah, yeah, right, correct, so right.
It wasn't only Levim,
right? But the Levim, but Shevet Levi, that was their, you know, they were the Kolel. Exactly.
So they were the Kolel.
That was the Shevet, that was the Kolel. That's what the Rambam says, you know, that Shevet Levi was set aside. From all the Shvatim, Shevet Levi was set aside. They were the ones who were going to be dedicated full-time. You know, to Avodas Hashem. So sometimes it was in the Beis HaMikdash, you know, in terms of formal service in the Beis HaMikdash. And the rest of the time, they were learning and they were dedicated and they were, listen. And I'm sure maybe there were some people who weren't cut, some Levim who weren't cut out for full-time learning. And I'm sure they did other things, you know, to help around the Levi cities. You know, and that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says at the end of Hilchos HaShmita V'Yovel, it's a very famous Rambam, because there the Rambam says that it's Lo Shevet Levi Bilvad. Right? It's not just Shevet Levi. Who has, you know what, it's a beautiful language. Once I have the computer here in front of me, I might as well find the exact, I'll get the exact language. But it's a beautiful language. Let's just take a second here to find it. This is one of the beauties of technology, that you can have just the one device in front of you and you have so much at your fingertips. Here, well, let's just find it.
I have Safari.
Yeah, you have Safari also. You can do it on your phone. Hilchos Shmita V'Yovel, here we go. The Rambam at the very end of Shmita V'Yovel. I'll tell you the exact. It's Perek Yud Gimel. It's going to be, I think it's the last, very last halacha. Halacha Yud Gimel. Yeah, Joe, if you want to take a look.
Where is it, Rambam?
Rambam, it's Hilchos Shmita V'Yovel. Perek Yud Gimel. The very end. Perek Yud Gimel, it's halachos Yud Beis and Yud Gimel. Oh. So listen to this. So the Rambam writes, it's our Indian. I'm glad that you brought this up, Erwin. But the Rambam writes that in Halacha Yud Beis, V'lama lo zocha Levi b'nachalas Eretz Yisrael u'bebizas ha'imechav. Right? Why wasn't Shevet Levi? Why didn't they get a portion in the land the way that all the other Shvatim did? So he writes, Mipnei Shehuvda La'avodas Hashem, because they were separated to serve God. L'sharso, right, to literally to serve Him. U'lahoros terachav ha'yisharim u'mishpatav ha'tzadikim l'rabim, and also to teach the masses, right, to teach the masses Torah. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, he quotes the pasuk, Yoru mishpatech al Yaakov v'sarascholi Yisrael, to teach the statutes to Yaakov and the Torah to Yisrael. L'fichach huvdilu midarkei ha'olam, and he says that's why Shevet Levi was separated. They weren't engaged in the ways of the world. You know, the way that everybody else was. Lo orchin milchama kishar Yisrael. When the Jewish army went to war, Shevet Levi didn't go to war. Right, they stayed behind. Right, even though we know, you know, Mila Hashem Elai, we know, you know, Hanukkah is coming up. You know, Matisyahu was a Kohen, so the Kohanim went to battle. But that was an exception. In general, when the Jews went to war, Shevet Levi didn't go to war. They stayed behind. Velo Nochlin, right? They don't get the land. They don't work the land the way that everyone else does. Velo Zochin Atzmon Bekoach Gufan. Elohim Chel Hashem. He says they're the portion of God. Right? They're like Irwin said, they were the Kolo, right? Hashem's Kolo. You know, it's Hashem's Kolo at that time. Shenemar, Baruch Hashem Chelo. Vehu Baruch Hu Zoch Elam Shenemar, Ani Chelkecha Menach Alascha. And he says, that's why Hashem says, I'm your Chelek. Right? Don't worry about the land. I'm your Chelek. And that's why the Psukim that we're reading are saying the same thing. Right? That Hashem is their Nachal. Hashem is their Chelek. And then at the end, Halacha Yud Gimel, this is even the more famous Rambam, because here's where he expands it. And he writes, Velo Shevet Levi Bilvat. Right? The Rambam writes that this is not just limited to Shevet Levi. Right, Shevet Levi was set aside, that they were mandated, they had to be set aside. But he said, anybody who wants to opt to be like Shevet Levi, Ela kol ish v'ish mikol ba'i ha'olam, he says, any person, asher nadva rucho oso, v'heivino madao l'hibada l'amo difnei Hashem l'shar, so he says, anybody who wants to give of his own time and wants to stand and to do God's work, u'la'ovdo l'deas Hashem, to know God, v'holech yosher, and to walk straight in His path, the way that God made him, and he writes that this person is Niskadish Kodesh Kadoshim, right? V'yeh Hashem Chelkav v'Nachalosa La'olam, and Hashem will be his Chelek. So that's what that's the famous Rambam. The Rambam writes that it's not just Shevet Levi Bilvav, but anybody who wants to do this. Of course, you know, you got to make a living at the same time, right? But a person who wants to dedicate himself to Hashem's work, so he certainly is entitled to. Shevet Levi had to. They were mandated that they were set aside, but anybody else who wants to is more than welcome to. Yeah.
Now the Kohanim were set aside. Who?
Yes. So this is Shevet Levi. No. So this is Shevet Levi. So Shevet Levi was comprised of Kohanim and Leviim, right? Both Kohanim and Leviim were part of Shevet Levi. So this was both of them, Kohanim and the Leviim.
Right. But yeah.
Kohanim didn't go to battle generally. They didn't go to war.
Well, the Kohanim didn't go.
Generally, they did not go to war. No. So Hanukkah was the exception. Yeah, Hanukkah, where we have Matisyahu and his five sons, Yehuda Maccabi, they were the Chashmonaim, so they were Kohanim, and they did go to battle, but that was the exception, not the rule. In general, they didn't. Kohanim, you know, in the times of Hanukkah, they were a little bit desperate, you know, so nobody else wanted to fight, so they had to take it upon themselves. Yeah, right. Also, they didn't have a choice. Yeah, right. Okay. So that's pretty much it for in terms of Perek Yud Gimel. So let's go to Perek Yud Dalet. And here's where the story picks up a little bit. You know, not so much in terms of the names of the places. In the beginning, we have a few psukim that are like that. But here's where the story picks up a little bit. So in Perek Yud Dalet, the Navi begins Ve'ela Asher Nachalu Bnei Yisrael Be'eretz Kenan. So until now, again, Perek Yud Gimel, we were focused on Eber Hayarden. We were focused on east of the Jordan River. We were talking about what the land that Moshe set aside for Reuven, Gad, and half of Shevet Menashe. So that's what we were focused on in Perek Yud Gimel, and now in Perek Yud Dalet. So the Navi tells us Ve'ela Shenachalu Bnei Yisrael Be'eretz Kenan, that these were the people that were in charge of the division of the land in the land of Israel. Right, we're now west of the Jordan in the land of Israel. These were the people that were in charge. Elazar HaKohen, right? Elazar was the Kohen. Elazar, as we know, was Aaron's son, so he was the Kohen Gadol at the time. Yehoshua ben Nun, right? Yehoshua was obviously the leader. V'rashei Avos HaMatos Livnei Yisrael, and we have the heads of the Shvatim. Meaning, this was like a committee that was divvying up the land here, that was dividing the land. It wasn't just Yehoshua by himself doing it. It was Elazar. We need Elazar because we need the Urim V'Tumim, as we're going to see, that the Urim V'Tumim played a role in the Goral, in the lottery that's going to be at play here. And the heads of the tribes, they were the ones who were overseeing. They were the representatives of each of the Shvatim. As Pasuk Bey says, "Begoral nachalasam," that the nachala was done through a goral, through a lottery. Kasher tziva Hashem biyad Moshe, as Hashem commanded Moshe, "Lesishas hamatos v'chatzi hamata." We have 9.5 Shvatim left, right? 2.5 Shvatim settled in Eiver Hayarden. Okay, we have 9.5 Shvatim left. So that gets us to the entire 12 Shvatim, and as we'll see exactly who they are, we'll talk about. The other side wasn't a goral. The other side was not a goral. The other side was not a goral.
Why did Moshe say, Yehoshua say, okay, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours?
In Eretz Yisrael? In Eretz Yisrael proper? I think because it was Eretz Yisrael, because it was a holier land, so it had to be divided. In other words, it had to be divinely inspired.
They divided it up before they crossed over. Remember, they said that we're going to build barns for our cattle and houses for our wives. So they already had that divided.
But that was Eber Hayarden. That was Reuven and Gad. Yeah.
So it was divided already. That's why it didn't have to happen.
Correct. Moshe. Yeah. Right. Moshe took care of that. Yeah.
Moshe took care of it.
Right. Because that was Eber Hayarden. So Moshe took care of that. And I think also, I think Hashem didn't really care, and Moshe didn't really care exactly where they settled. In other words, the Nachala in Eretz Yisrael for the Shvatim had to be somewhat divinely inspired, because this is Eretz Yisrael, this is the Holy Land, and each one wants a chelik of Eretz Yisrael. Reuven got in half a Shevet Menashe, they're settling in Eber Hayarden, so that's a technical thing. They just wanted grazing land for their cattle, that's why they wanted land there. So Hashem didn't really care exactly where the Shvatim are going to fall out. So wherever they settled, Moshe divided the land evenly, I guess, between the 2.5 Shvatim. But here it had to be a divine element to it, and that's why we needed the Goral and we needed the Urim V'Tumim to be involved. Now, in terms of how exactly the division worked, so it happens to be that there's a lot of literature about this, a lot of spilled ink about exactly how the Goral worked, both in the Psukim in the Torah, that describe a little bit the division of the land, the Mefarshim and the Navi here. There are Gemaras that talk about it in Bava Basra. There are Sugyas that talk about exactly how the Goral was done. The Rishonim, there's a lot of literature that's written about this. So obviously we're not going to go through everything. I'll just share with you the Malbim. The Malbim actually mentions here that the opinion, he says, of all the opinions, you have the opinion of the Ramban, how things were split up. He says, of all the opinions, the Malbim says, I agree with the opinion of the Ravid. One of the Rishonim, the Ravid, he says, I agree with the opinion of the Ravid the most. He says, I think that his opinion works best with all of the Psukim. And he says that, interestingly, he says that the Ravid's opinion was that the Goral was only used for the boundaries of the land. It was only used for the boundaries, for the actual Gvulos. But the actual land and the way it was divided, in terms of the broken down into different parts, he said that was already that was not done by Goro. That was done depending on how big the Shevet is, so they'll get a larger piece of land. So certain bound, not obviously not the whole boundary, but certain boundaries were decided by Goro, that here Reuven's land is going to start, let's say, or here Shimon's land is going to start. But then in terms of how large a piece of land they got, that depended on the size of the Shevet. And that's the Torah says, "L'rav tarbe nachalosa, v'lama atami nachalosa." That depending on if it was a large shevet, that we're going to get a larger piece of land, and if it was a smaller shevet, that we're going to get a smaller piece of land. Because one of the things that the Mefarshim, grapple with a little bit is that how can you have a goral if the size of the pieces of land were predetermined? So how do you have a goral? Meaning, you have some shvatim were bigger and some shvatim were smaller. So the bigger shvatim needed more land. The smaller shvatim needed less land. So how can you have a lottery if you have, if it's not even sized pieces? How do you have a lottery deciding who gets what? It couldn't be just left up to quote unquote random. It's really divinely inspired lottery, obviously. So he says that the Ravid's opinion was that it was just the outer boundaries that were by Goro, and in terms of the size of the portions, that was determined by Yehoshua and this whole committee that we have here, Yehoshua, Elazar, and the heads of the Shvatim, depending on the size of the Shevet. And the greater Shvatim needed the bigger piece of the land.
Received equal land. In other words, the size, the whole land.
Yes, right.
Each
correct.
Each person got an equal.
Yes, part. Right. That's what it seems. Yeah, yeah. So it depends. So the bigger shvatim needed a bigger piece of land. Yeah, right. Okay. So it was done by Goral. The breakup of the general breakup was done by Goral. And then Psukim, Gimel, and Dalet are interesting. So here, because here again we mention, and now again we're talking about in Eretz Yisrael proper, and the Pasuk says in Gimel, it sounds repetitive. Ki nosan Moshe nachla shnei hamatos v'chatzi hamatim eivar layarden. Right, so it's only 9.5 shvatim left because Moshe already took care of the 2.5 shvatim in eivar hayarden on the eastern side of the Jordan. And then it says again, v'la levim lo nosan nachla besochab. Right, the Pasuk repeats that the Levim were not given a portion, which we just read about in Perek Yud Gimel, and again in Perek Yud Dalet we're repeating that. And then in Pasuk Dalet, it's again repetitive. Ki hayu b'nei Yosef shnei matos menashe v'Ephraim. Right, that the children of Yosef were two shvatim. That was Menashe and Ephraim were the two shvatim that were the b'nei Yosef. V'lo nasnu chelek la Levim ba'aretz. And again, right, we repeat again that the Levim were not given a portion in the land. They were given cities to dwell in. They were given cities to live in, and they were given what's called migrashehem or a migrash, which we'll talk about in a minute. And it says limiknehem for their cattle, ulekinyanim and for their possessions. So first of all, why are we all of a sudden talking about Bnei Yosef? It's interesting. It's kind of like thrown in out of the blue here. We have, talking about the Menashe and Ephraim, the Bnei Yosef. Why are we talking about them? So the Radak mentions very simply. He says you might get your math confused, right?
12 minus 2 and a half.
Because if you're doing the math and you're taking out Shevet Levi, right? So what are the 12? It's 11. It's 11 Shvatim. So he says that's why the Pasuk has to put in Menashe and Ephraim. No, Bnei Yosef Yosef is split into two, Menashe and Ephraim. So don't get your math confused. That even though we're taking out Levi, right? We're substituting Yosef with Menashe and Ephraim because Yosef is split into two, and that's why we still have 12 Shvatim. The reason why it says Levi twice here is because, again, emphasizing they didn't get a portion in Eiver HaYarden, east of the Jordan, and they also didn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael proper. So that's why we're mentioning both. Right? Moshe didn't give them a portion, and Yehoshua also didn't give them a portion. Right? Nobody's giving them a portion per se. It's interesting. I never knew this before. Actually, I saw this Mitzudas Tzion because I've seen this word Migrashehem, in many different places. So I always assumed that Migrashehem meant the fields. They were given cities, and then outside the city limits, they had fields outside the cities that the Levim, if they wanted a garden and they wanted to plant something, they were allowed to plant. They were allowed to do things. So they had certain fields given outside. It's interesting. Mitzudas Tzion says that the Migrashim actually refers to buildings. He says they refer to binyanim. They were buildings that were built outside of the city walls. Many of the cities had walls, and these were built outside of the city walls. And he says that's why they were called Migrashim. Why? Ligaresh is to drive out, right? Like a divorce is called a gerushin, right? That's one of the words for divorce in Chazal. Right, so here, so Migrashehem, he says, were the cities that were outside because they were. Oh, it's almost like they were driven out of the city. That these things were built outside of the city limits. But these, whatever it was, either it was buildings or it was fields that were built outside of the city limits. But that's what they had. Okay, then we have an interesting story. And this is really where Kalev came. I know I titled the Shir Kalev, but we're going to only start talking about him this week, and then we'll continue with him next week. But in Pasuk Hey, we have Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, Kenasu B'nei Yisrael Vayachalku as Haaretz. So just like Hashem commanded Moshe, that's the way that B'nei Yisrael, Yehoshua took over and B'nei Yisrael divided the land. And then here we have Pasuk Vav introducing Kalev. Interesting. Vayikshu B'nei Yehuda El Yehoshua Ba'Gilgal. So the B'nei Yehuda, right? B'nei Yehuda, it's not just Kalev here, but the whole Kalev was from Shevet Yehuda. But here you have the whole B'nei Yehuda. It doesn't sound like it was the whole Shevet, but a delegation from B'nei Yehuda came to approach Yehoshua in Gilgal, right? What was Yehoshua doing in Gilgal? So so we know that the Ralbag explains that the Mishkan was in Gilgal, right? Until now, there was no Yerushalayim wasn't built yet, right? We didn't have the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim yet. So Gilgal, we know, was the first place that the Jews camped, and that's where they set up the Mishkan. So the Ralbag says that since the Mishkan was in Gilgal, that's why Yehoshua was there. So Yehoshua was in Gilgal. So the B'nai Yehuda came to Yehoshua, who was in Gilgal, and they approach him with Kalev. And now the Navi tells us, "Vayomer elov Kalev ben Yefune Haknizi." So Kaleb ben Yefune from Knezi is talking now to Yoshua, and he says, "Ata yadata es hadavar asher diber Hashem el Moshe, isho Elokim. You know that which Hashem spoke to Moshe. Moshe was the man of God. Al odosai v'al odosecha b'kadosh Barnea." Right, the conversation that Hashem had with Moshe in Kadosh Barnea. And as we're going to see, what's Kalev coming to do here? He's coming to request his chelak. Right, because Kalev was given Chevron. As we know in the Torah already, the Torah alludes to this, that Hashem tells Moshe, give Kalev a special chelak, give him Chevron, because of what he did with the, you know, he didn't bow to the pressure of the Meraglim. So Kalev is coming now to demand that which is coming to him, that which is due to him. So the... it's interesting, why did the Bnei Yehuda come with Kalev? Why didn't Kalev come himself? Why didn't the Bnei Yehuda come? So some of the Mefarshim say, the Malbim says, I'm sorry, the Ralbag says, that they came out of Kavod. Right? He was their Nasi, Kalev was their Nasi. So Kalev came to make a request to Yehoshua, so they came with their Nasi out of Kavod. They came with him to support him. Some say they came to help him, you know, I guess to argue his case maybe, even though, you know, I don't know why this would be such an issue. But they came to argue his case, and now they're coming to make his case to Yehoshua. Many of the Mefarshim pick up at the end of the pasuk Vav where it says Al Odosai v'Al Odosecha, right? That it says that he's referencing that which Hashem spoke to Moshe about me and about you. Right, he's talking about himself, Yehoshua, and himself, Kalev, and Yehoshua. So the Alshich is a fascinating Alshich here. And the Alshich says that that if you think about it, you know, these two, Kalev and Yehoshua, were the only ones who were successful out of all of the Meraglim. Right? The Meraglim, we know the 10 Meraglim spoke badly about Eretz Yisrael. Kalev and Yehoshua were the only successful ones. Right? So Moshe intervened on behalf of Yehoshua. We know that Moshe davened for Yehoshua, right? Ko Yoshiacha Me'atzas Meraglim, he changed his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua, he added a Yud, right, to daven for him, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help him. And we know that Kalev also davened for himself. He was Nishtateach Al Kivrei Avos. He went to his to the Kvarim of the fathers to daven that he should also be successful and he shouldn't be influenced by the Meraglim. So it says the Alshich, why these two? Why specifically Kalev and Yehoshua? What was it about them that Moshe felt he had to intervene for Yehoshua, and Kalev, for himself, recognized the need to intervene, that he needed a little extra siyata d'shmaya to make sure that he wouldn't fall prey. So the Alshich says, fascinating. He says that which shvatim were they from? Right. So Yehoshua is from Shevet Ephraim, which comes from Yosef, and Kalev was from Shevet Yehuda. So says the Alshich, that both, so he doesn't go in that direction, he goes the opposite direction, back in history. So he says that both Yosef and Yehuda messed up in the past, right? In a sense of almost speaking Lashon Hara, or doing something, doing something negative as it regards to their speech. So what did they do? So Yehuda, he says, when the brothers sold Yosef, right, and shechted the goat and put the goat's blood on the kesones, on Yosef's coat, well, they brought it to Yaakov, and Yehuda was the one who brought it to Yaakov and says, Hakerna. He says, do you recognize this? Right, the kesones zebni, right, the bincha ola. Right, is this kesones? I forget the exact language of the pasuk. Right, is this kesones, the kesones of your son or not? So Yehuda was the one who was deceiving his father. He was involved in the deceit of his father by bringing this kesones and deceiving his father. This is Yosef's, and he must have been eaten. And that's why, you know, Yaakov says, oh, Taraf Yosef. You know, he was a chayara achalasu. He was devoured by a wild animal. So he was involved in deceiving his father. So he misused his speech when he was deceiving his father. That was Yehuda. Yosef, what did he do? So we know that Yosef was motzi diba, that he was maybe as diba samra el avihem, that he came to his father and he had negative reports about his brother. His brothers. They may have been true, right? And we know the Chazal discussed what exactly did he tell them, and, you know, did he tell them, and, you know, how exactly did it happen? But he brought negative reports about his brothers to his father. So both of them, in a sense, did something wrong with their speech. So says the Alshich, if their grandfathers, Yosef and Yehuda, did something wrong with their speech, he says already there's a koach hatumah in the Shevet, that it sets up a koach atumah. There's some sort of a negative influence in their children, and they have a tendency, perhaps, to make mistakes with the same thing, with their speech. And he says that's why they were at greater risk, so to speak, of messing up. And Moshe had to intercede with Yehoshua, and now we and Kalev interceded on his own behalf. He went to be Dishnateach al Kivrei Avos. But he said that's why the pasuk says about Kalev in Parsha Shlach. It says Kalev Ekev Haisa Ruach Acheres Imo. So usually we understand Ruach Acheres Imo that Kalev had a different spirit about him. So generally we understand that in a positive way, that he had a different spirit about him, that he was able to withstand the pressure from the other Meraglim, and he was able to stand up to them and to say, I'm gonna give a good report. So says the Al-Sheikh, no. Ruach Acheres Imo means there was something negative. He had a negative ruach about him because of what his grandfather did. Because Kalev came from Ephraim, who came from Yosef, because of what Yosef did. So that's why he had a Ruach Acheres Imo. So that's a whole different way of understanding these psukim. But here we're beginning to see that what went on, you know, way back when with Kalev, and we're talking, you know, 40, we'll see the math in a minute, he's about to say how old he is, but we're talking, you know, let's say almost 40 years ago, you know, a little more actually than 40, you know, 40 years ago, 45 years ago about, where this happened, this whole incident with the Meraglim, but we're bringing this back, and now Kalev is going to show, you know, going to express what he did right, and therefore what he feels he's entitled to as part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we'll stop here. Mitzvah Hashem, we'll pick up next week with the rest of the story of Kalev and Chevron. Yeshikoach.
You got it.